7. Yes, summer was rituals, each with its natural time and place. The ritual of lemonade or iced tea making, the ritual of wine, shoes, or no shoes, and at last, swiftly following the others with quiet dignity, the ritual of the front porch swing. On the third day of summer, in the late afternoon, Grandfather reappeared from the front door to gaze serenely at the two empty eye-rings in the ceiling of the porch. Moving to the geranium pot-lined rail like Ahab surveying the mild, mild day and mild-looking sky, he wet his finger to test the wind and shucked his coat to see how shirt-sleeves felt in the westering hours. He acknowledged the salutes of other captains on yet other flowered porches, out themselves to discern the gentle ground-swell of weather, oblivious to their wives chirping or snapping like fuzzball hangdogs hidden behind black porch screens. "All right, Douglas, let's set it up." In the garage they found, dusted, and carried forth the howdah, as it were, for the quiet summer night festivals, the swing chair which Grandpa chained to the porch ceiling eyelets. Douglas, being lighter, was first to sit in the swing. Then, after a moment, Grandfather gingerly settled his pontifical weight beside the boy. Thus they sat, smiling at each other, nodding as they swung silently back and forth, back and forth. 10 minutes later, Grandma appeared with water buckets and brooms to wash down and sweep off the porch. Other chairs, rockers, and straightbacks were summoned from the house. "Always like to start sittin' early in the season," said Grandpa, "before the mosquitoes thicken." About 7 o'clock you could hear the chairs scraping back from the tables, someone experimenting with a yellow-toothed piano if you stood outside the dining-room window and listened. Matches being struck, the first dishes bubbling in the suds and tinkling on the wall-racks, somewhere, faintly, a phonograph playing. And then, as the evening changed the hour, at house after house, on the twilight streets, under the immense oaks and elms, on shady porches, people would begin to appear, like those figures who tell good or bad weather in rain or shine clocks. Uncle Bert, perhaps Grandfather, then Father, and some of the cousins. The men all coming out first into the syrupy evening, blowing smoke, leaving the women's voices behind in the cooling, warm kitchen to set their universe aright. Then the first male voices under the porch brim, the feet up, the boys fringed on the worn steps or wooden rails, where sometime during the evening something, a boy or a geranium pot, would fall off. At last, like ghosts hovering momentarily behind the door screen, Grandma, great-grandma, and mother would appear, and the men would shift, move, and offer seats. The women carried varieties of fans with them, folded newspapers, bamboo whisks, or perfumed kerchiefs, to start the air moving about their faces as they talked. What they talked of all evening long no one remembered next day. It wasn't important to anyone what the adults talked about. It was only important that the sounds came and went over the delicate ferns that bordered the porch on three sides. It was only important that the darkness filled the town like black water being poured over the houses, and that the cigars glowed, and that the conversations went on and on. The female gossip moved out, disturbing the first mosquitoes, so they danced in frenzies on the air. The male voices invaded the old house timbers. If you closed your eyes and put your head down against the floorboards, you could hear the men's voices rumbling like a distant political earthquake, constant, unceasing, rising or falling a pitch. Douglas sprawled back on the dry porch planks, completely contented and reassured by these voices, which would speak on through eternity, flow in a stream of murmurings over his body, over his closed eyelids, into his drowsy ears, for all time. The rocking chairs sounded like crickets, the crickets sounded like rocking chairs, and the moss-covered rain barrel by the dining-room window produced another generation of mosquitoes to provide a topic of conversation through endless summers ahead. Sitting on the summer night porch was so good, so easy, and so reassuring that it could never be done away with. These were rituals that were right and lasting. The lighting of pipes, the pale hands that moved knitting needles in the dimness, the eating of foil-wrapped chilled Eskimo pies, the coming and going of all the people. For at some time or other during the evening, everyone visited here. The neighbors down the way, the people across the street, Miss Fern and Miss Roberta humming by in their electric runabout, giving Tom or Douglas a ride around the block, and then coming up to sit down and fan away the fever in their cheeks. Or Mr. Jonas, the junk man, having left his horse and wagon hidden in the alley and ripe to bursting with words, would come up the steps looking as fresh as if his talk had never been said before, and somehow it never had. And last of all, the children, who had been off squinting their way through a last hide-and-seek or kick the can, panting, glowing, would sickle quietly back like boomerangs along the soundless lawn, to sink beneath the talking, talking, talking of the porch voices which would weigh and gentle them down. Oh, the luxury of lying in the fern night, and the grass night, and the night of susurrant, slumbrous voices weaving the dark together. The grown-ups had forgotten he was there, so still, so quiet Douglas lay, noting the plans they were making for his and their own futures. And the voices chanted, drifted, in moonlit clouds of cigarette smoke, while the moths, like late apple blossoms come alive, tapped faintly about the far streetlights, and the voices moved on into the coming years.